I want to draw your attention to something before I read the text, and so I'm going to refer to it in the sermon. So you'll notice that there are two different texts here, and eight verses have been taken out in the middle, right? So what I want you to see is that this text has one part and then jumps for another part that you wouldn't notice if I was just reading. That's all. So Matthew 13, 1 through 9 and 18 through 23. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Such great crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there, while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen." That's the end of that first section. So moving to verse 18. "Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such a person has no root, but endures only for a little while, and when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, that person immediately falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. But as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. So let's talk dirty. You know what, I was working with this text this week. Here it is, thank you. As I was thinking about these various types of soil, it took me back to the days when Tricia and I lived in Napanee. Now, in case you don't know, Napanee is a fairly large farming community in northern Indiana, where we spent pretty much the first 14 years of our lives together. And while we weren't farmers, we aren't even good gardeners, we did learn a bit about farming because the house we lived in was completely surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of acres of farmland. And one thing I can assure you, unlike the sower in our parable this morning, is that farmers in Napanee didn't take any chances on inadequate soil, which meant that early every spring, before the planters even came out of the barn, the farmers would get on their tractors and spray their fields with this sort of liquefied manure. And it wouldn't be long until that sweet, pungent, vinegary fragrance would permeate not just the air, but our noses, our houses, our clothes, even our cars, leaving a bouquet that would last for weeks. In fact, to this day, for me at least, that odor brings back fond memories. Now, I don't know what first century farmers knew about soil preparation, and I don't know if Jesus knew how to change bad soil into good, but maybe that's what this parable is all about. By this time in Matthew's narrative, Jesus had accumulated a good number of followers, but at the same time, he'd accumulated a good number of opponents as well, which I suppose is what happens when you go around saying things like, the first will be last, and the last first, or don't retaliate against someone who wrongs you, turn the other cheek. Or, and perhaps especially, it's not enough that you love one another or love your neighbor, you must love your enemy too. And the opponents would arise because such things threaten to upend the entire social structure. And while many may celebrate such revolutionary ideas, just as many were probably threatened by the possibility that, if embraced, such ideas could be quite costly to the powerful elite. So traditionally, this parable has been allegorized to point toward those who were hostile to or simply could not conceive of Jesus' message, and therein anyone who would be deemed less than ideal soil is singled out as being outside the grasp of God's kingdom. The problem is, characterized as soil, the individual is a victim of their circumstances and where they happen to be located, not to mention the assumption that change is impossible. So Jesus says, listen, a sower went out to sow. And he depicts four types of soil: hard-packed paths, rocky, shallow places, thorny ground, and good soil. But get this, that's it. That's the parable. And if we heard just that, we too might wonder if Jesus was missing a few marbles. But you see, we're not first century hearers. And so it's fascinating that scholars believe the latter half of our reading, the interpretation half, was an insertion by some scribe along the way who thought he might help his future readers out by including an explanation. In the original version of the parable, the first section, the sower is the individual who's at fault. He's the one that sows on less than ideal soil, and the soil itself is merely a victim of its surroundings. But with the interpretation, the scribe indicates that the soil itself is at fault, and that each type of soil holds human characteristics, suggesting that some are hardened against God's kingdom, or too shallow for God's kingdom, or just choked out by worldly desires. And of course, there's the good soil, the good people like you and me, right? The problem is the interpretation suggests that soil has some moral capacity to reason and transform itself in comparison with the other three types of soil, as if capable of self-determination. But I'm going to let you in on a secret here. Soil is just soil. It has no ability to make decisions on its own. It has no ability to determine its surroundings, and it has no ability to determine what it will or won't grow. So why is it that the sower just flings seed everywhere. And why would he waste such a precious commodity by scattering it in places where he knew it would not grow? Maybe he does so to remind us that the gospel is bigger than traditional planting techniques and right things in right places. Maybe he does so to show us that God's potential is bigger than our ability to comprehend and bigger than just soil. Or maybe the sower scatters his seed indiscriminately in order to suggest that the arena of God's care and redemptive activity has no boundaries. Paul Ricoeur depicted faith in three stages and insisted that none of us are in the exact same place. The first stage is pre-critical naivete. And that's the faith that we have as children, or some might call it Sunday school faith, because we lack understanding of faith and we think of it as black and white, and the Bible is to be true word for word on its own merits. And some people never move beyond this stage. The second stage is critical thinking, which Marcus Borg likened to someone who's gone to college and begins to question their preconceived notions and previously held truths. And there are some who will remain in this stage indefinitely, often considering themselves agnostic. But the third stage is post-critical naivete. And here, one is no longer concerned with the accuracy of Scripture or the old notions of faith, but gains an even greater awareness that the Bible can be true without needing to be factual. Or as Borg often said of Scripture, "I'm not sure it happened exactly that way, but I believe it to be true." So, in the parable of the sower, might Jesus actually be alluding to various stages of faith? And not that it's non-existent, but that everyone's faith matures at different rates. And like the uninterpreted parable, there is no differentiation between good and bad, especially when it comes to faith. And may even suggest that each one of them can be a good place to be planted depending on where you are in your faith journey. From this perspective, it all depends on what we do with what we know about who we are in relation to God in Jesus, and maybe whatever stage we're in. We're in the process of becoming the good soil of which Jesus spoke. Allegorically speaking, then, while not specifically named the sower in this story, the one sowing the words of God's kingdom would have to be Jesus, which suggests that the sower is not cautious or strategic about scattering his seed where the chances for growth are the best. Rather, this high-risk sower relentlessly throws seed indiscriminately on all soil, as if it were all potentially good soil, which points to the possibility that as the sower sows the seeds of God's kingdom, we're left to wonder if the seeds of God's kingdom just might germinate anywhere. And I would imagine that the sower doesn't just sow once, they sow year after year, season after season, suggesting that if one's spiritual soil is not yet ready, that doesn't mean it won't be ready the following season. Theologian Jörg Rieger proposes that overall what the parable of the sower is trying to tell us is that we need to rethink the persistence of God. First, this parable asks us to recognize God's power in a different light, and that like a seed, God's power unfolds its potential in relation to its location, which means that it can be rejected, it can be diluted, but when it finds its mark, when it finds its mark, that seed makes a tremendous difference. Second, the parable asks us to rethink God's love, which doesn't smother its subjects like an overbearing patriarch or overzealous pastor. Rather, this love invites a mutual relationship of give and take, marked by persistence rather than control, or hope rather than fear. It is not frustrated, even when there is no response. And third, this parable asks us to see salvation in a new light. God does not give up easily, but keeps sowing the seeds of the kingdom despite all odds. And in the end, the results become visible. Plants grow that can be sown again, and the kingdom of heaven becomes a reality in our world, a reality that neither the forces of evil, the shallowness of the church, nor the lures of power and wealth can prevent from happening. Maybe each of us have all kinds of soil in us, and they're determined not by our level of faithfulness, but where we've picked them up along the way. Maybe we've picked them up among the highs of life, those mountaintop experiences, or maybe they've accumulated in the dark valleys of faith. Darkness and death seem to surround us. Maybe we've picked them up when our lives are easy, where the path we walked is marked with success and progress, or maybe they've accumulated when our path is steep, with roots and rocks challenging faith. Maybe we've picked them up when the earth is freshly fertilized, rich with nutrients and sure to foster growth. Or maybe we've accumulated them in the midst of struggle, when the very real thorns of life threaten to choke out our faith. But each are vitally important to both our own faith development and God's kingdom, because ultimately, as soil, we are tasked with not only cultivating the seeds of God's kingdom, but spreading that seed as well. In reality, we sow seeds everywhere we go. If we walk in the woods, we pick up seeds that attach themselves to our clothing. We blow dandelion fluff into the air. We throw those little helicopter seeds here in the land of the maple tree just to watch them flutter to the ground. As people of faith, we sow seeds whenever we reach out to someone in need, or provide for someone without the resources they need to survive, or simply walk alongside someone whose own path has become hard or unstable. But the real thing we need to remember is that no matter what kind of soil we are, or where we are in our faith lives, God still plants seeds in us, so that at the right time, in the right season, throughout our life experiences, we are transformed. Transformed into good soil, to be cultivated, to be fertilized with some of that good stinky stuff, and to be planted wherever we are.